Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the McCarthy Project live from Minnesota, where we have been attacking life and sports since 2001.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. This is Stephen McCarthy, your host, and I am with Mark Allen, triathlon world champion and probably one of the biggest players in the beginning of our sport becoming popular. How you doing today, Mark?
Pretty good, Stephen. Just hanging out in Santa Cruz, California. Beautiful day.
Yes. Yes, I'm hanging out in Minneapolis, Minnesota. You know, that's way better than Santa Cruz, California, for sure.
Nice. Well, you got a little more green stuff going on this time of year.
No, I tell you, I've only been out to that, to the San Francisco area one time in my life. And I can honestly say it is probably the most relaxing area. You know, that is, it's about the same as going out on a lake, but I think it's better because you actually literally can ride along on your bike and you go up in hills and there's coffee shops all over. So I think it's a fantastic place.
Great. Yeah, it's a good place for training. It's a good place for I live two blocks from the ocean and I surf now almost every day, at least when there's surf. And you know, that's kind of my go-to sport. I did that when I was a kid. And then I got into triathlons. Well, I was a swimmer growing up from the time I was 10 till I was all the way through college, and then, but mediocre at that. And then I got into the sport of triathlon in 82 at the age of 24. And, you know, during the season, I was definitely swimming, biking, and running. That was all I could handle. So,
Yes. Well, it's funny because I hopefully today that we, I want to kind of cover a subject that I think that you probably have the most unique perspective of, is that you have seen the sport develop over the years and have seen a lot of coaches come and go, and a lot of philosophies of training, and this is the one way to win. And like in America today, we always want to have the silver bullet, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But I would really love to kind of talk philosophically about the art of writing a program or having a program for yourself, in that the two extremes being, well, science says this, or art form, which, well, it works really good for me. I mean, eating those prunes 16 times, you know, every 15 minutes really works well for me. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And there's the, every program comes down in between. But so today I wanted to just get your feelings, you know, first of all, kind of give us a historical view, because I think it'd be fun for everybody to hear some of the cool stories that you've heard of programs and how people have gone about trying to train for triathlon.
You know, when I started in the sport, there were no coaches for the sport because it was so new and nobody really had experience combining a swim, a bike, and a run together. And so my first sort of coaches were just individual sport people who were telling me how to get ready for a marathon, how to get ready for a 100-mile time trial, how to get ready for a, you know, 2.4-mile swim. And, you know, if I took all of that advice and did it all, I would have killed myself because, you know, it's swimming, biking, and running are three different sports. Triathlon is a different sport from swimming, biking, and running. It happens to have those three elements in it, but it is its own unique beast that you have to figure out how to put together. And I saw very early on that you know, a lot of the research on ways to train was done in studies where a researcher might do, you know, a 2-week or 4-week or 6-week run with athletes, having them do a specific technique, and they would show that, yeah, see, this works. However, what will work for 6 weeks may kill you after 6 months or a year. And so it really is an art form to be able to take the sort of the science and then adapt it to the real world, where your body is not a machine that can be programmed day in and day out. You know, you have some days where you're really strong and you can do the workouts, and other days where if you do the workouts, you're going to dig yourself into a hole that's hard to get out of. And that was the hard part for me to learn as an athlete, was to realize that one of the biggest components of training smart was to get enough recovery and to do hard workouts at the right points of the year, not throughout the entire year, to do the long workouts in the same way. You know, I've seen a lot of coaches who are looking only at the short term, and sure, they have athletes who get in really, really good shape very quickly, and maybe, you know, top pros, they'll have one or two amazing years where, you know, they can win races, they can go to world championships, but then you don't hear about the athletes anymore because they're completely broken down. And my philosophy for myself and for all the folks that I coach is, you know, get people stronger, faster, quicker in a way that's sustainable so that they can keep going as long as they want. And they'll keep getting better for years, and they won't get injured, they won't be burned out, and overall the experience is just going to be so much more positive.
Well, because I think just to pick out a few things as we move down this this kind of this discussion is, one of the biggest ditches that I see is that because, you know, a lot of people think they might be short on time, that if they feel that they just do these really random hardcore workouts, I call them, mm-hmm. where they feel, well, I only have 4 hours, so I got to kill myself during those 4 hours in order to get where I want to go. How do you view some of those kind of these get it quick type of mentalities where they just want it now and they figure they can short circuit the system, so to speak?
Well, it's kind of like saying, you know, I need to lose 50 pounds, but I've only got 2 weeks to do it, so let me not eat anything. you know, it's kind of the same mindset. It just is not something that's sustainable. If somebody has limited time to train, probably one of the things that's happening for them is that they have a life that is already fairly stressful. And so if you do high-intensity exercise activates your adrenal system, which is what you need to deal with stress. So if you have very limited time to train because of job and family commitments or whatever, you're probably feeling a little bit of stress already. You're under stress on a day-to-day basis. And then if you add more stress with your workouts by doing high intensity, you know, something's going to break. Something's going to give. And, you know, usually it's not something that you want. Maybe you get injured, you get sick, you get burned out, and you can't train. You know, the philosophy behind those short, high-intensity workouts is that in the short run, they do a lot of the things that you want to have happen. A high-intensity workout will help release human growth hormone. It'll help, you know, it'll give a kick in of testosterone release. You know, it helps you to build new lean muscle. It increases your VO2 max. It does a lot of good things. However, because it is high stress physiologically, it also releases cortisol, which is a hormone that helps you deal with stress. If cortisol is elevated day to day over a long period of time, it starts to make your body go in the completely opposite direction. You start to metabolize lean muscle, which means you get weaker. It suppresses your immune system. It disrupts your ability to sleep, which is when that human growth hormone gets released. It inhibits human growth hormone release, so then you're not releasing the stuff that helps you repair and rebuild and get stronger from those fast workouts or those intense workouts. So, you know, my recommendation for somebody who is kind of in this situation is make, you know, 90% of your workouts aerobic. Have them be at a level that is lower stress on the body. They're not high intensity. Use strength training to help stimulate your body to get stronger, to release all of those hormones that will indeed help you lay down lean muscle so that you eventually get faster from it. Strength training, if done wisely, is very low stress on the body, even though it's anaerobic. And so you can get the best of both worlds by doing that. Do your swimming, cycling, and running fairly aerobic. Incorporate, you know, 2 days a week of some smart strength training. And then you can get a lot of benefit out of a short, you know, not too many hours of training each week.
I think that's a great point, too. So you actually are a big proponent of the strength training component in a endurance athlete's training regimen.
Absolutely. You know, if you're over Well, any age will benefit from it, but especially if you're over about 33 years old or so. If you don't do strength training, you will not maximize the time you put in swimming, cycling, running. If you do strength training, you will maximize that. And when I'm talking about strength training, I'm talking about you can either do traditional strength training or you can do functional strength work, but it has to be done in a way that challenges the muscle so that you are challenging it. You are making the muscle work a lot harder than it would, you know, when you're out there swimming, cycling, running. In other words, if it's a circuit workout, you're working endurance. If it's, you know, a couple sets of 6, 8, 10, 12, 15 reps, then you're working the power element of it. And that's what I like people to do when they're doing those strength workouts.
And the big thing is just to, I know you're going to disagree with me, but more than likely the bodybuilding magazine or Muscle and Fitness probably wouldn't be the location to go ahead and find those training programs.
Probably not, you know.
Because I'm telling you, it still to this day, I almost drop my jaw when I see bodybuilders, you know, the bodybuilder personal trainer working with the triathlete, you know, having them do, you know, single joint muscle hypertrophy training that just adds weight, and they wonder why they're not getting better, they're not seeing the results. It's still... I suppose when an industry gets a kind of a in set, you know, ways, you know, it has a little bit harder to change. Before we move over to a couple other things, one of the things I want to ask about is creativity. Because one of the things that usually happens in the triathlon world is that it's made up of these really hyper type A's, really, really smart people. And they have a tendency to really want to focus on the science. How do you view, or what do you look at as far as creativity, or how can you be creative at the same time as following the science?
Well, you have to, for sure, I think the sport does attract people who are really smart, to be honest. You know, it's a big puzzle to put together if you're doing an Ironman distance race or any triathlon, really, you know, to combine three sports together. You have to have a certain amount of wit up there to figure out how you're going to maximize the time you put in training. The thing to ask yourself with any kind of creative endeavor to sort of mix it up is to ask yourself, am I mixing this up just to entertain myself, or is it actually giving me benefit? And a lot of the sort of new fads in fitness, if you will, they come about just because there's something different, new, and people love them, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to do anything to get you, make you a better athlete or give you more fitness or give you longevity. So you have to just ask yourself that question. Is what I'm doing different today to be creative giving me something that's going to be beneficial later? Certainly, you know, our bodies get used to routine. I mean, we all know this, and you've probably covered this in a lot of your interviews, but you know, if you do the same thing over and over and over, you do the same loop, the same direction every day, after a while your body will stop responding, meaning it won't get any more fit because we just get efficient at what we do. We're built to become efficient at what we do. So there is a need to vary your training over the weeks. Let's say you have 20 weeks to get ready for a big race. You know, maybe you'll have 3 or 4 weeks where you're doing kind of one style of training, then you change things up, you add distance, you vary your routes, you modify the intensity that you're doing each of the workouts so that your body does continue to build fitness, it continues to respond to the stimulation of training. But too much mixing it up and you don't gain the efficiency that you need to be efficient in your swimming, cycling, running. So, you know, let's say you're in your race, you're doing an Ironman, and you're going to be riding 112 miles. Okay, you have to be very efficient in that, meaning on the bike, in the position that you're going to be racing in, you have to be as efficient as possible so that you burn less calories per mile per hour so that you have the energy to run a great marathon. So how do you gain that efficiency? Well, you have to do a lot of riding on the type of terrain at the at the cadence rate and in the position that you're going to be in during the race, so that all the neuromuscular patterning becomes efficient and takes less energy, so that all your energy systems are moving in that spinning circle at the cadence rate that you'll need during the race and everything like that. Now, if you think, well, gee, I need to mix it up, and so a few days a week you go do a spin class, which means you're on a bike that isn't the same position or maybe not even the same crank length as you have on your bike that you're going to race on, then all of a sudden, sure, you're going to get maybe a different kind of fitness, but it won't translate to what you need in the race. So I don't know if that makes sense, but...
Oh, has, 100% makes sense.
Yeah, that has,
because
there
there's
has
such...
To,
go ahead.
This has to... It's a balance between keeping your body stimulated so that physiology keeps improving, but at the same time, making it sure that it's improving in the direction that you need it to be going in.
And see, that's the thing that when you look at training as a whole, over the last year or so, there's been in the world that I've been running around, is that there's ultimately it's the most individualized program for that particular individual based on how they respond to it. That's mm-hmm. the ultimate goal, is if you could have one coach working with one athlete and then seeing how your body is responding to that training program, then make adjustment. But the problem with that thought is that people in America get to tinkering, you know, and they just start to, well, that makes sense, I'm just doing something different, you know, or that makes sense, I'm just doing something different. And then they're so backwards that they're actually compounding on top of one another, and they're not even getting any benefit from any of the work, because they're basically going over the same, I guess, training methods, even though they look different, if that makes
yeah.
sense.
And, you know, when you add something in, it takes a while for it to really filter down and affect core fitness. So if you're always changing things up, you may never really get the full benefit out of something that's really wise and smart and sound, because you just don't give it enough time to really play itself out in your body. You know, I would make small changes in my training every year, because, you know, I figured there has to be more that I can do to try and get better every year. So, you know, there would be a few things that I would say, okay, this year I'm going to try whatever, another thing. And I would give it the whole year to figure out, is this really working or not? And that's a true test. You know, if you test something over time, if you have one, you get the triathlon magazine and you read it that month, and they highlight something that a coach says, and you do that month, and the next month another coach is telling you a different technique and you try that, you'll never ever get the benefit out of any of it, and you'll probably end up hurting yourself because you're trying too many different things.
Amazing wisdom, because you think about it, how many actual, I'm saying, we'll say outside, we'll say any athlete anywhere would try something for a year in hopes, you know, that after about 6 months, if it's not working, we're going to keep giving it the time. I think that shows a lot of patience and understanding about yourself. You know what I mean? I think that's fantastic. All right, so let's move over to recovery, because I think this is another hot button that this old idea of working hard, you know what I mean? And it seems like triathlon or endurance athletes catch the bug and they see some benefit of working hard, and then they feel, well, if I worked hard this week, well, I can work twice as hard next week and I'll get just the same benefit. And then they end up going down the spiral to nowhere, like you mentioned in your earlier comment. How do you view recovery, and how do you implement it into a training program?
Well, recovery is it's the fourth part of the sport. There's swim, bike, run, and if you're a triathlete anyway, swim, bike, run, and recovery. And if you're a runner, there's swim and recovery, cyclist, swim and bike and recovery. And recovery depends on the type of training you're doing. So if you're doing either very long endurance work and or a lot of high intensity work, you're going to need more recovery. Your body just needs time. So I try to spread out the key big workouts that people are doing each week, so that there are some days that are distinctly lower intensity and lower volume so that the people's bodies can recover. And usually most people can kind of build or add on to things for, you know, 2 weeks in a row, and then they've at most, and then they have to kind of back it down a little bit. So, you know, when people are building up, let's say at the beginning of the season, you know, think of it like a stair step. So you add to the volume and or intensity for 1 or 2 weeks, and then you back it down a little bit, give your body a break, and sort of allow it time to absorb the benefit of that work, and then you then build up again for a week or two, and then back it down, build up, back down like that. But probably the biggest place where people don't build in enough recovery is when they're going toward their final big event of the year. You know, I found this out the hard way myself. I did Ironman. I competed at the Ironman in Hawaii for 12 years, different years total during my career. And the first 11 of those years that I did it, I always noticed that about a week after the race, that's actually when I felt the best. And finally, you know, when I went into my 12th Ironman, the last one that I did it in 1995, earlier in that year, I'd read a research study that was done in Europe, and they found that over 90% of all endurance athletes went into their biggest races overtrained, meaning they weren't recovered fully for it. And so I thought, okay, you know, all these other years I've been doing a kind of a three-week taper, stair-step taper down from the peak of my training to get ready for this big race. This year I'm going to spend 4 weeks. And it was the first Ironman of my entire career where I felt like I was actually, truly, fully recovered for it. And that's a long time to start backing down. And, you know, it's not like you're doing zero, but
yes,
you're slowly backing down. And most triathletes, most endurance athletes, you know, they're type A, they're type AAA. They want to keep pushing up until the week before. That's not enough time. It's just
yes,
not enough time for your body to really charge up and be at that super, super high level.
Yes, because we've even seen it a couple times where athletes are training, and they have a minor injury. And then they take a couple weeks off before their race, and they come back and do a PR. And they wonder, well, how'd that happen? I haven't been training. And then you just get to talk to them about recovery, and that probably was the first time you actually ran a race that you were at a recovered position so that you could actually do the race at the highest level possible.
Exactly, yeah.
So, I have one other question, and then we'll kind of shut her down because I know the time is short. But give us – I want to talk about nutrition, but I want a specific area of nutrition in that it seems as though in recent years there's been the big push into all these different scientific different, you know, sports drinks and gels and salt sticks. And I mean, I'm sorry if I used a brand name. I didn't mean to, but if you're looking for a natural way, say you want to stay away from the scientific chemical type scenario,
mm-hmm,
or are you more on the side to say, hey, this science stuff, this chemical things are much better than the natural, if that makes sense?
Well, that's a great question. You know, when you're in a long endurance event where you're going at a fairly high level of output, you're going through calories really, really fast. And when you're doing that, hour after hour, the blood in your body basically is going to the working muscles and away from your digestive system. So the challenge with natural foods is that most of them require a fair amount of breaking down to release their energy. If you're in a race and you're going at, you know, your max output, there just isn't the energy in your digestive system to break stuff down, to release that energy, to get it to the working muscle so you can keep going fast. And that's why, you know, a lot of the sports drinks and gels and stuff have been adopted, just because they're very simple sugars that actually get into the bloodstream fairly quickly. They don't require much breaking down to do that, and so you end up having the energy to sustain the pace that you want to go, that your fitness isn't able to do. It's not great, I don't think, for your body necessarily, because you're just taking in basically this sugary stuff for 5, 6, 8, 10, 12 hours. But it's about the only thing that will sustain your energy. You know, like in years ago in the Tour de France, and I don't know how it is now, but, you know, they used to eat sandwiches and solid foods and stuff, but it's a different type of event because it's a multi-day event, and there were periods where they would ride a little bit slower so they could digest it. If you're doing an Ironman or a half Ironman or an Olympic distance triathlon or a running race, you know, a marathon, you're at such a high output level that there's just no chance that you'd break down something solid. If you wanted something sort of natural, you know, honey's probably about the closest you're going to come to it, to be mixing that in with water and with, you know, some like sea salt or mined salt that has a lot of different minerals in it, trace minerals and stuff. And you could probably get away with that, but you'd have to really see how, you know, figure it out, mix it up, test it
how
out.
How it goes. Because it is an interesting world, because what are your general thoughts on the organic GMO movements and all those kind of things before I ask the next question?
Well, I think the GMOs are out of hand. You know, just the fact that, you know, it's releasing the pesticide inside the corn so that the insects don't eat it. Well, thanks. I get to eat that corn too, you know.
Exactly. But that's it leaves you in such an interesting position, because you really do see the value in the science, but if you also value the other side of the science, which is essentially the con side, you know, you almost literally have to make the decision between the two and then live with the consequences, I suppose.
Yeah. You know, nature is pretty darn perfect. It's taken millions of years to create the balance that we have here on this earth. And now we're trying to re-engineer the whole ball of wax, you know, saying, okay, forget it. We're not going to have a lot of different things growing on these acres of land. We're going to have one thing, and soil, and then all the bugs do have a chance. They just come in and go, yummy, I love this. And then all of a sudden you got to spray them, otherwise you lose your crops. I mean, it's a vicious cycle. And I was
I think it is, and it's funny because one of the things that I've challenged myself I was born and raised on pancakes, you know, and I had hamburgers once a week, whether I would like it or not, you know, so to speak.
Yeah.
And it was all, you know, carbohydrate processed, you know, food. And then I ate the school lunch and the whole traditional diet. One of the hardest things for me to do was to switch over to a more cleaner diet, you know, and I just think it's a fascinating discussion when you come down to, I'm trying to think of, you know, old wives' tales, you know, of, you know, I took this original salt drink that I just poured a whole quart of salt into the water or something. I mean, I'm just being facetious, but, and then we drank it, and boy, I performed at a high level, so we're all going to drink this salt material, you know.
Mm.
It really does have some legitimacy in understanding that science and nature are not congruent, and you have to kind of live with it, I suppose.
Well, when you're talking about racing, that's not a natural state. Let's just, you know, clear that out right now. I'm sure you never saw, you know, 2,000 people back in ancient times running as hard as they could go for 8 hours or 10 hours. You know, that's a very, very extreme state. So what you need to sustain that very extreme state are extreme things. So certainly, you know, sports drinks are not natural, but they're what's needed to sustain the effort that you're putting out in a race. But, you know, I always say it's not what you eat or drink. It's what you eat or drink 90 or 95% of the time that really affects your health and makes you healthy or not healthy. And so, you know, you put up with it. You do what it takes to have a great race. And then when you're home, then you can eat all
the
food.
Enjoy the process of life.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we've come to the end of the time. I want to thank you very much, Mark. It is truly an honor to talk with you today and get your feelings, because I think it is a unique perspective when you look at the full 20 or 30 years. Well, probably a bit a little longer than that, I suppose. Probably about, it's funny. You never do math on the radio, I found out, so that everybody knows.
Well, I've been in the sport since 1982, so 31, almost 32 years now.
There you go.
Yeah. It's a long time, boy. Yeah.
So cool. So if people are interested to get a hold of you, where should they look you up on the internet?
Great. Yeah, they can contact me at my coaching site, markallenonline.com, or and that's triathlon coaching, or they can also see workshops and seminars I teach out there in the world at fitsoulfitbody.com, fitsoulfitbody.com. We have a great book Brant Secunda and I wrote together called Fit Soul, Fit Body, 9 Keys to a Healthier, Happier You. And in there we actually talk a lot about these themes that you just brought up about training and eating smart and dealing with stress and all of that.
Well, I think that's even, I'm just looking at the site right now, even just to give you a little background on myself, I owned a cycling and triathlon shop for 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. And so I always enjoyed the wetsuit questions, you know, because they were, you know, they really are an art form. You know, a lot of people like to think there's a lot of science, but I see that you got the sleeve versus sleeveless and a lot of really cool questions that I used to get asked a lot of times, you know. So I think it's fantastic that you have it out there.
All right. Great. Thanks, Stephen.
Cool. Well, have a great day. Thanks for coming on the show today.
All right. We'll talk to you later.